This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Good morning. It's hour number two here on a Wednesday as we're rolling along on SportsMap Radio. So I'm excited for the NFL weekend, of course, and I'm excited because of college football this weekend. And, you know, I started thinking, hey, look, we're reaching, like, there's a turn in the calendar that it comes in every fall when we go into October. And I know you're like me. There's 2 months out of the year, out of the calendar, out of the year of the 12 that are really good for sports. There's just two. You know, April to me is the best, but man, October's, if October's not a close second, it's 1B.
It's an argument.
Right? It really is. I mean, to me, I like April because I like the start of the playoffs in the NBA and the NHL. I like the start of baseball season. I like the NFL draft. I like the Masters. I like there's usually the basketball championships. The NCAA basketball championship is in the early part of the month. So I like it because there's a potpourri. There's a buffet of sports to eat. You know, you can have a little mashed potatoes or you can go with like the pasta or you can go with the roast beef or you can go with the pork. That's April. In October, you get that, but it's sort of different, right? College football's heating up. NFL is getting, like, where you got to start winning some games. We can now start identifying teams in October as good and not so good. Like, at the beginning of the season, it's like, well, it's early. October is when it's not early, right? October is when you really got to start picking it up a little bit. But the conference schedule heats up. The NBA is getting started. NHL is getting started. And, of course, all of the month is loaded with postseason baseball. And for me, college football, we're going into week number five. Five, all right? Now, these guys only play like 12 games, so yeah. We're almost at the halfway point of the season.
Yeah, I'm not liking that, Tony.
I know. It's going by too fast already. And now is the time where games cannot, if you lose games, you're not going to necessarily make it up. You're not necessarily going to be in a position to overcome it. So if you're Michigan, for example, and you're playing a weak Wisconsin team in Madison, just be careful because, you know, losing this game could be problematic down the road for that big picture question in the sport. All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next as we continue. We'll also talk some Ole Miss football later on this hour as we continue along. It is Wake Up Call, SportsMap Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb midweek edition. It really, I say this all the time, it doesn't really matter. The good's the good, and the bad's the bad, and the dumb's the dumb, but let's get the good of the day.
Now, I'm going to preface this good by saying, kids, don't try this at home.
Okay, don't try
actually,
it at home.
Adults, don't try this at home. But I do got to give it up to one man.
Okay.
And this guy is, he's from Chicago, and he pulled off kind of a Andy Dufresne situation.
Oh, he did?
If you catch my drift.
Andy Dufresne crawled through 500 feet of pure filth.
Well, before we get to the filth.
Okay.
Because this guy wasn't in jail. Let me preface it that way.
Oh, okay. Well, I was all excited. But where he's an escape story.
But, well, he chipped away at something. Apparently, the city had put a speed bump, a rather large one, just behind his garage. Like, it was in an alleyway to stop people from going, and it was a little high, and his car kept bottoming out. So one of the days he went out there, he saw that the part of it was cracked a little bit. So he took that piece and removed it. And then came the bright idea of, like, you know what? I could slowly remove this myself. And
oh,
it's exactly
idea.
What he did.
Good idea.
Piece by piece, a little bit at a time. No one would really notice. He kept removing sections of the speed bump.
Did he walk around the park and dump the stones out of
his
pants?
No, he was a little more responsible. He just kind of kept a pile of it right next to his trash cans.
That's awesome.
But but in a way, it's kind of a hero story. I mean,
yeah.
You know, nobody likes speed bumps, and this one. He said that, you know, they made it a little too high. He kept calling to complain, like, you know, I don't mind the speed bump, but can you lower it? Because every time his car went over it, like, in his driveway or his garage is right there, It's like he just the way we'd pull in, the way he would pull out, it would always scrape the bottom of his car.
Oh, and that's just bad, man.
Yeah.
That's terrible. So, obviously,
he just took matters into his own. He did get a fine for it.
I was going to say, with you telling me this story, it's now common knowledge that he did do this.
Yeah, he ended up, I don't think he got a huge fine yet. He got a $500 ticket for digging without a permit.
All right, but here's the larger story. Okay, it cost him $500, and it's probably, I don't know his finances. Maybe it's, where is he from? Do we know?
Chicago, in Brighton Park. So, I don't know if Brighton Park's a... What kind of neighborhood that is.
Maybe he can afford it, maybe he can, I don't know.
Right.
But in the end of the day, if he's shown the city, look, I asked you not to make it high, I chipped away at it. Now that I've paid this fine, can we talk about the speed bump that when you rebuild it? Like, that might be worth it.
Yeah.
$500. Because, look, he had to do something dramatic to get their attention. He did. He paid $500, but at least got to the attention. He got to take the speed bump out. They're going to put one in, but at least he now can say, see, I now have national media attention on this. So I think it might be worth it. But well done, Andy Dufresne, part two.
Yeah.
Man, it's too bad he didn't crawl through a sewer pipe to emerge on the other side clean as a whistle. I love that movie. That's another movie I will watch when I flip through Guide and it says Shawshank Redemption. I land on that thing. And
you can't help it.
I'm not going anywhere.
Can't help it. That movie.
I love it.
There's, you know what it is. It is too. What it is all the actors play the characters perfectly.
Perfectly.
And that's what really gets you. It is, you know, the story is the story. I mean, it's a good story, you know, but it's the fact that. The characters, the actors played those characters. I mean, even the secondary characters, I can't remember, like the other inmates. You know, you could really see that. Yeah, you know, it was almost like this was their family.
Yeah, real quick, I don't want to get on a tangent on it, but I do want to say it was the first time because that movie came out in the 90s,
94.
So I was kind of young and impressionable. But that was the first time I realized. What institutionalized was.
Yeah.
I didn't think that was a thing.
No,
I thought every single person in prison wanted out of prison, right? I didn't even think about the people who went in there young, stayed there for their adult years, were older, and then didn't want to leave. Because remember when they say Biggs is an important guy here?
Yeah.
Right? He's
Brooks.
Brooks was an important person here. He had value. Out there, he's nobody. I didn't think about that. Until I saw that movie, I didn't think there was a possibility. I just thought everybody was trying to get out of prison. Like you go to prison and you're desperate to try to get out. I didn't realize you could build a life that you were more comfortable with until that movie came out. And the warden, when he goes, not today, not tomorrow, not after breakfast, now. I kind of use that with my kids. I want the dishes done. Not tomorrow. Not after breakfast. Now. I love that line.
Yeah, what is it? It's it comes up every so often, but at one point during when Shawshank Redemption was out, in the movie theater, you had a choice between Shawshank Redemption, Pulp Fiction, Forrest Gump, and The Lion King.
I know, right? Amazing. Amazing.
Like, what do you watch?
I will go see the new James Bond movie at the theater, and I won't have really any other interest in any other movie that is
not
in
at
the
all.
Theater that is being played at that moment. I will not go, oh, it's Bond and, ooh, that romantic comedy with Tom Hanks. No, I won't do that.
No, not at all.
All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is I feel bad for this guy. But apparently a squirrel has been stashing his nuts inside the guy's truck.
All right, that was a mature laugh, but now explain the story.
42 gallons of black walnuts were stuffed in this guy's truck over a period of like a couple of days.
How many gallons of
42
walnuts?
Gallons.
No way. this never happened.
The pictures are incredible. The guy literally had to take off his bumper, his fenders, because it was just stock filled with nuts.
Okay, 42 gallons of nuts were in his truck.
Yeah,
one squirrel.
The way he measured that was because he had taken all the nuts and kept putting them in trash cans, the big trash cans. They're like,
oh, so this was over how long of a period of
time? A couple of days.
What? Come on.
A couple of days.
You and I couldn't come up with 43 gallons of walnuts if we were walnut farmers doing it as a job.
I know. This squirrel, I mean, I have to believe
Where
there's more than one squirrel.
Where is he getting all of these walnuts?
I guess all the trees in the neighborhood.
I like walnuts. There's 43 gallons
yeah,
of walnuts
42
in
gallons
trash bags.
Of, 42 gallons of black walnuts. I mean, these walnuts are pretty big. I mean, they still have the soft shell around them.
I gotcha.
As well. Okay. But, I mean, yeah, you look at these photos. It's stuffed in the engine. It was stuffed down the fenders. It was, I mean, everywhere. This squirrel was like, you know, hey, winter's coming.
All right. That's pretty awesome. Well done, squirrel.
Well done, squirrel. But
he found a place.
I mean, but does insurance cover that?
I don't know.
You got to take
Good
apart
question.
Your car to get all the nuts out?
Can you imagine? Like, you go to a mechanic. You're like, I don't know why my car's not running. You go, well, you got a bunch of nuts in your car. What? Got a bunch of nuts in your car. I got to break out the manifold. I got to take out the transmission. I got a bunch of nuts in there. You're like, did you say nuts?
Nuts?
You're
nuts,
nuts
for saying nuts.
What do you mean nuts? Well, you know, so many squirrels, they take nuts and they put them in the car. I would think he was lying. If a mechanic told me that, I'm like, you're just trying to get me to pay some sort of remove nut fee from your list of things you're going to do to my car. I want to see these so-called nuts.
It's funny. God. I'm going to send you the photo.
Gallons of nuts.
42 gallons of nuts. It's
like, do you just bring them to your wife and go, hey, what do you want to do with these? Let's make something with them.
Right? Or do you take them to like a farmer and go, here you go, yeah. How much? You know, you don't have to pay labor. The squirrel did it all. I sent you the photo. I emailed you the photo. So
okay,
you can
I can't
see
wait to see it.
A couple of photos.
Oh, my God.
I mean, you open up the hood, and it's just littered with nuts. You know, like, sometimes you open up the hood, and you see leaves?
Yeah, right.
And you're like, that's annoying. I'll take these leaves out. I mean, it's just everywhere this squirrel could stash a nut, he did.
See, and if you're
It's mixed in with, like, the fan belt. It's mixed in with the... I mean, everything, every place.
And if the squirrel could talk, he'd look at the guy and go, I worked my ass off.
Yes.
What are you doing?
I completely feel that this is a Donald Duck, Chippendale situation.
Exactly. You know how long it took me to get all of those walnuts and put them in your car? And you just took them and put them in bags? Thanks for nothing,
just threw them
man.
In trash cans, got rid of them?
I have an idea. Why don't I just starve to death this winter? How about that? That would make your life a whole lot easier. Let me just die.
You know what? You killed me.
That's right.
You killed me.
Yeah, you killed me. You killed me. Thanks. Thanks for nothing. You just killed me and my entire family. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Man, who needs to drive. Well done, squirrel. We got your back, squirrel. What's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is that a Danish artist got paid $84,000 for two empty frames.
Oh, come on now with these squirrels.
Now, here's how it went, right? A museum had hired this guy because he does art with money, right? And they paid him. They said, here, we're going to pay you $84,000. We want you to recreate some of the arts that you did where he would, like, you know, it's just like thumbtack money in an artistic way to a canvas. I'm not sure, or glue it to a canvas. I'm not sure exactly what he did. And he decided, he looked at it. He didn't want to go through all the labor again because it was labor intensive. I don't know how, but it was. And he decided that, you know what? I have an artistic idea. I'm just going to deliver you two blank canvases and I'm going to title it, take the money and run.
Oh, God, people have too much cash.
So the museum is upset, obviously, because all they were given were canvas with frames around it. That was it. And the artist is like, no, the art is the art.
See, that's the slippery slope. Once you allowed this sort of thing to start, this is what it leads to. You pay $84,000 for a blank canvas with some artistic, theoretical piece of art that doesn't exist.
So now we're... Now, you know, chalk that up with, banana on a wall.
Yeah.
I think it was the guy in Italy who put tape on the ground.
Right.
And
right.
got paid money and said, no, this is art.
Yep.
Avoid that area.
Art people, this is your fault. You did this. And if you don't like wasting your money on this, I don't have no sympathy for you. I'm sorry.
I created this. At least that one canvas that was painted blue. Just blue? The whole thing was just painted one color blue? At least that was, okay, I can get where that's art, but I still don't understand how that one's art. But
you know what? You told the Monets and the Picassos and the Rembrandts of the modern age, you told them to go away.
Yep.
And you wanted slop on a canvas.
Who wants Who wants a picture of a visible scene?
Yeah, you know what's you know what is disturbing though? How many people out there in the world right now are really the next Rembrandt or the next Picasso or the next whatever?
It can't be taken seriously.
And the world is saying, no, we want bananas taped to a canvas, and we want guys putting tape on the floor. Like, that's where it's at. If you want to make it in the art world, crazy, stupid stuff like this is selling. But if you paint a beautiful landscape that is detailed and is we got 100 of those. We don't need that. No. We don't need that. We need more bananas taped to canvases.
Because, yeah. You know, honestly, anyone who's ever watched a Bob Ross video can do a landscape.
Sure, right?
Come on. Yeah, he tells you how to paint pretty little trees. Pretty little trees.
Happy mistakes. Exactly. I love that.
So, yeah.
All right, well, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. And, man, I got to see this picture of the walnuts in the car thing.
It's fantastic.
All right.
It'll make you mad.
I'm sure it will.
Imagine driving down just hearing that rattling. What is that sound?
Oh, my God. It would drive me crazy. All right, we'll continue along with Wake Up Call. We got to talk Ole Miss football coming up as they got that huge game against Alabama again on Saturday in Tuscaloosa. We continue on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
O'Reilly Auto Parts specializing in keeping your car on the road. Not sure how much life is left in your battery? O'Reilly Auto Parts can help. The professional parts people will test your battery for free. If it does need to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right one to fit your car. Superstar batteries are built to handle even the toughest conditions. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Major League Baseball, don't look now, but the Yankees are winning. They've won 7 in a row, including last night in Toronto. And they've done so because they've adopted Bronxy the turtle.
Yes.
Do you see this?
How
fun is this? So they found it. They got a turtle. The turtle is now the new good luck mascot for those red hot New York Yankees. And they've won 7 in a row. A sweep of the Texas Rangers, a sweep of the Boston Red Sox, and now last night's 7-2 victory over the Toronto Blue Jays. Don't look now, but the Yankees could be the hot team in the American League. Are they hot? Yes. If they're hot, then what in the world are the St. Louis Cardinals? 17 in a row, a streak that began on September 11th. The St. Louis Cardinals have won 17 in a row. That is nearly 3 weeks of baseball without losing a game. That is remarkable. They might be the hottest team going into the postseason. You know what the problem is, though? These wild card games are like one game.
Yeah.
Like you could just have that one moment where you're like, hey, nobody's hotter than the St. Louis Cardinals. They come into the postseason having won 20 of 21. And then they lose 9-0. And you go, oh, well, that's it. And that was a fun storyline for 8 minutes. The Yankees could be that same. That could be that same one, right? So I'm glad they adopted a turtle. I don't know the story behind the turtle other than they have it.
I don't really know either.
Like, where'd they get it? Who gave it to them? Is there a turtle? Like, did one of the players go, you know, in my apartment here in Midtown Manhattan, I've got this turtle, and I want to give it to you. So, how do they get this turtle?
It just appeared one day, I guess. I'm not sure. Was it on the? Was it outside the stadium? Was it crossing the tracks?
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to find it. I'm trying to find the lucky charm of the turtle.
I mean, if it's Bronxy the turtle, did they steal it from the Bronx Zoo? Did the Bronx Zoo give it to them?
Maybe so.
And go, here, have a turtle on us.
Yeah, that's kind of a big risk. They're like, hey, we think your streak will be broken if you take care of this pet.
Yeah, now it's in New York City. Does it like pizza?
Yeah.
Does it have ninja fighting skills?
Yeah, exactly. So the Yankees, rolling along and should make the postseason as of right now. But it's a tight race between.
It is. I mean, you know, the wheels
Toronto,
can still
Boston.
Come off.
Yeah, this still could come off. It's still got a week, not a week left, but a couple of handful of games left before the close.
But in a way, I mean, I'm not really a Yankee hater. But in a way, I am kind of bummed that they did this because I like the anarchy that could have happened.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Had the Yankees not made the postseason where everyone predicted them to make pretty much the World Series.
Oh, yeah, they were going to crush everybody because they were so loaded. Yet here are the Tampa Bay Rays again with the minimal payroll and unbelievable talent from the farm system.
Yeah.
97 wins. And here's the thing. You look how good New York is. And I know Boston, I think the expectation with Boston was kind of in the middle of the road, but it's potentially
I think they overachieved. I think you could put Boston and like the San Francisco Giants in the same category.
Right, right. Because I don't think when we talked to Steve Gardner back in late March, early April, I don't think people were thinking the Red Sox were built to, like, I think they were going through some things. But Tampa Bay won this division going away. I mean, they didn't just win. They won. They're leading by 7 games right now.
Yeah.
I mean, they just crushed. It's crushing that division.
It's like hard to fathom.
It really is.
Because, I mean, we do this with the A's all the time, right? Because the A's have always just seemed to be good, seem to be relevant, and, they're always in the postseason. We don't know one player on the A's.
Right.
Except for, I'll name my guy, Sean Manaea. I think he's still with the A's.
Matt Chapman is on the A's.
Matt Chapman, there you go. See, we're expanding our A's knowledge.
But people who know the Tampa Bay Rays are saying this. Hey, watch out. Their farm system is still loaded with young talent.
I know. Do they have the best scouts in baseball?
They must because, remember when the Pirates had Bobby Bonilla and Barry Bonds in the early 90s,
yes.
Right? Like, the Pirates, were good. And then they had these stars, Andy Van Slyke and whatnot. They had these stars. But then eventually the stars went on to other things and the Pirates became irrelevant again. That's what usually happens to a Kansas City team. Or name your small market team that kind of rises up a bit, challenges, and then they disappear.
Yeah, you named Kansas City. Kansas City is that. They went on to win the World Series with great talent. Yep. All that talent took off.
Yep. And so now...
Now we're back to the Royals like we know them.
Exactly. And now you look at Tampa Bay... And they're not just a team that caught fire. And while we have no real explanation for this. No, there is an explanation for this. They're really good. And their system down the line is excellent. Wander Franco, when he came up to the majors, people were buzzing about him because the Rays had him and they couldn't wait to bring him to the majors. And he's been great. Randy Arozarena, I had no idea who this cat was until last year when they were rolling through the postseason.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was when they were playing the Dodgers. That was the first time I really noticed him. And everyone was saying, this kid is this, and he does this, and he's that. And I'm like, I've never heard of him.
And that's what's making him, if you're in Tampa right now, if you're a Rays fan living in St. Pete or wherever, this is a team that's going to be relevant for a long time. This isn't just a team you better get one now because it's all going to get dismantled like those old Marlins used to do when they'd win a World Series. If the Rays win a World Series, they might win 2 or 3 in a span of 5 or 6 years. I mean, you never know. They're that good. The fact that they could survive, losing Evan Longoria and Blake Snell and,
they didn't miss a beat.
David Price. I mean, they just keep making playoff runs. And that's dangerous if you're the Yankees and your philosophy has always been find players, get players, acquire good players, overblown contracts or whatnot. And you're looking at a team that's no, we got young talent that when we get them, we're going to keep them and try to lock them up for a long time. And if we lose them, because there's somebody else within our system that will just come up and take their place. That's amazing to me. Right? I mean, look at Blake Snell. He went to the Padres. If you had said at the beginning of the year, who's a better chance of winning the World Series, Blake Snell or the Rays? You would have taken Blake Snell and the Padres.
Yeah.
But the reality of it is it's the Rays.
And the reality, too, Padres were eliminated.
Right.
Early.
Yeah.
Where I have a hard time understanding how they got eliminated.
Yeah.
And they're not, they were eliminated, I think, almost two and a half weeks left in the season.
And again, this is a Rays team that's not when they face Chicago or when they face Houston. No, they have every right to be repeating as American League champions, right? No, I'm not going to be surprised if the White Sox do it or the Astros do it. But the Rays should have every reason to believe that they are absolutely the favorites to win the American League. This is not, this is not going up against a juggernaut in the Astros or the White Sox. It's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic. But pay attention to the Cardinals. They've won 17 in a row. They are on top of the wild card stands. They clinched a wild card berth with their win. Not on top of it because the Dodgers actually have the top spot. But they could be very, very dangerous in that game. But the Dodgers, this is crazy. The Dodgers, your Dodgers, 101 win, and they have a wild card team.
Yeah.
That's Oh, Atlanta. This happened in Atlanta and San Francisco in the 90s once. It was nuts.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, huge game, Tuscaloosa. We got number one Alabama and Ole Miss coming in. Neil McCready joining us on a Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. He's from rivals.com, Rebel Grove, to help us get a look at Ole Miss's side of things as they go to Tuscaloosa to try to upend the number one team in the country. How are you, Neil?
I'm good, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about this team so far at 3-0. We kind of figured Ole Miss would be very good offensively. Overall, though, the complete picture of this Rebel team, how would you define it?
The transition to the kind of an offense without Elijah Moore has gone smoother than I thought it would, in large part because Matt Corral has just been terrific. They've probably run him a little bit more than they'd like to run him, considering how important he is to their offense. But you know, their running game has been very good. Their passing game has been good. Opposing teams have really focused on Braylon Sanders, and they've gotten burned by it. Opposing teams have done a lot of the drop eight stuff, you know, that Arkansas did to Ole Miss a year ago with such success, and it hasn't worked this time. And you know, Corral has not thrown an interception yet. He's at 9 TDs, no picks. Really hasn't even come close to a pick. He's made really good decisions. He's on top of his game, and then. Defensively, I think they're, like you said, we knew they'd be better defensively. No one knew how much better. Chance Campbell, the linebacker transfer from Maryland, has been a massive difference maker. He's been an impact player. I think they hoped that he would solidify things, and I think he's done more than that. Sam Williams, who's been inconsistent in the past, has started to show some of that consistency at defensive end that they've longed for. And, you know, they have more bodies, more talented bodies, more depth in the secondary. They're using a lot of a kind of a dime scheme with six DBs on the field, in large part because that's where they have a volume of talent. So it's a significantly better defense than it was a year ago, but it's still, you know, a year ago they were 117 in total defense, which is, it was just awful. They were horrible. And this year I think they're in the upper 50s, so that's much better. It's an improvement, but is that good enough for you to be an elite program? Kind of iffy, so I guess we'll start to find out Saturday.
This is one of those games that Ole Miss can play really, really well, but still lose. But if they do win this game, everyone in the preseason kept saying, Lane Kiffin's going to score a lot of points, but they're going to give up a lot of points. Is this one of those 55-54 kind of outcomes, and that's the only way Ole Miss can win this game?
I don't think so. I mean, that game last year was crazy, 63-48. Yeah. Ole Miss was in it midway through the fourth quarter. But you know, Ole Miss gave up 723 yards a year ago. I mean, like Alabama only left, it was like 31 yards on the ground. I mean, that was all that was left that Alabama, had they been playing against air, that's what they would have gained, which is just an absurd number to think about. I mean, I think if you told Lane Kiffin this morning that, hey, you're going to give up 50 points, I think he would think they got blown out. I mean, I think Ole Miss, if it could find a way to hold Alabama to the low 30s, has a chance to win the game. I know there's a lot of people out there and the over-under's high, and I get it, but, man, I've covered this league for a long time, and you just don't see a lot of teams go into Tuscaloosa and put 49, 52 points on the board. And I think if that's what Ole Miss has to do to win the game, I don't think they're going to quite get there.
What has it been like since Lane Kiffin arrived? We know the sort of circus-type things that he's done in the past, but he's a brilliant coach that has been on a high level for a long time, even at a very young age. What has he been like to come to this program? What was the program like before he arrived? What is the difference that he's made since he has arrived?
Well, I mean, look, Hugh Freeze cratered this program. I mean, he built it, and then he cratered it. The massive probation made winning during Matt Luke's era impossible, and so there was a ton of apathy that set in. And then on Thanksgiving night of 2019, when they had the piss and miss game, that they were the laughingstock of the country. I mean, they had become a joke, and they hired Lane Kiffin, and you know, for all of the whole Joey Freshwater stuff and all of that stuff that's out there. And I know Kiffin does some things on Twitter that's kind of funny, but none of that stuff really happens around the program. He's made them relevant. He's made them entertaining. I think he's solidified them. He has a very good coaching staff. Jeff Lebby is a future head coach as the offensive coordinator. DJ Durkin had an unfortunate incident at Maryland that obviously cost him his head coaching career, at least for now. But he's a terrific defensive coordinator. They've got a young recruiting staff. They're starting to recruit at a high level. I mean, in short, he's made them relevant. He's got them on the rise. And, you know, there's a lot of people that talk about this game Saturday as some sort of a must-win deal. And I couldn't disagree more. I mean, they're way ahead of – if you had told me on Thanksgiving night 2019 that Ole Miss on October 2nd, 2021 would be ranked 12th in the country when the Tuscaloosa, I would have laughed in your face. I mean, I would have said, you're insane. I would have thought you were just a giant Ole Miss fan. He's done a phenomenal job. I mean, right now, if you were to talk about SEC Coach of the Year, and again, they haven't played an SEC game yet, it'd be Sam Pittman and Lane Kiffin, and the conversation would stop there.
Is your thought, though, when people say it's a must-win game, what criteria are you using compared to the people who are saying, like, well, if Ole Miss wants to be in the playoff, it's a must-win game? Are you looking at the season differently than those who are saying it's a must-win game because what they're looking for Ole Miss to do is maybe different than what you are looking for Ole Miss to do?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't – if you told
me – because if they lose this game, they're not going to go to the playoff.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to the playoff anyway.
Right. Okay.
I mean, I don't think they're going to the playoff if they beat Alabama on Saturday. This is a thin roster. It's still the beginnings, really, of a rebuild. And I think if Kiffin stays long term, or even if he stays medium term, I think there's no doubt that the direction that they're headed, they're going to be even more relevant moving forward, even without Matt Corral, who's going to go top 10 picks in the NFL draft. I just think when you look at the overall roster, though, like they lose an offensive lineman or two and they're in trouble. They lose a defensive lineman, they're in trouble. They lose a linebacker, they're in trouble. They lose one wide receiver, they're in trouble. So, yeah, I mean, if you could come down and say, no, this team is going to stay perfectly healthy. Okay, well, now we have a different conversation now. But this team's about to go through a stretch where they're going to play Alabama, Arkansas, Tennessee, LSU, Auburn, Texas A&M, boom, 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 boom. The odds are they're going to get banged up a little bit. And I just think over the course of that, that's going to bite them at some point. They still have to go, you know, they still have to go to Jordan-Hare. They have to finish the season at Mississippi State. It's a rivalry game. It's very hard to win on the road. I mean, if they lost to Alabama and then ran the table, probably have a shot, an outside shot, but if they beat Alabama and lost only one game, they could still be a playoff team, but I think that's a lot to ask. If you told me before the season that Ole Miss went 10-2, I would have said that's best-case scenario.
Yeah, sure.
Frankly, I think 10-2 is on the table right now.
For those people around the country who just, you know, look, college football is very local, so some eyes aren't on the SEC, and they're hearing Matt Corral, and they're hearing slight Heisman favorite. What kind of quarterback is he? What is his strengths? What can people expect if they're tuning into this SEC game for their first SEC game of the season?
He has a generational arm. That's the first thing you have to know, is that there's not a throw he can't make. He gets tremendous RPMs. He has a great deep ball. He's a kid who has grown up a ton. I'm always surprised in our field how we you know, in 2018, he played in kind of his first game, and he started a fight in the Mississippi State game in the end zone. I mean, he looked very immature, but 3 years later, he's really grown up a lot, which is kind of what you expect of your kids when they go off to college. You know, you hope that by the time they're seniors, they're a completely kind of a different maturity level than they were when you moved them into the dorm that first day. So that's applied to Matt Corral as well. He's really grown up. He's a very good decision maker. He is a very bright kid. He's got great feet. He can run. He has really benefited from Jeff Lebby and Lane Kiffin from a coaching standpoint. I know people talk about Spencer Rattler, and they talk about Howell at North Carolina. I think the two best quarterbacks in the country are playing in this game Saturday.
Yeah, I agree completely. And one other thought on Ole Miss. We see about Matt Corral. Other offensive weapons, who has stepped up this season? In the first, I know it's a small sample size, but who else can people be looking at offensively that could make a difference in this game?
Yeah, so they've got a deep running back room. Jerry and Ely is probably a first, second-round pick if he comes out. Henry Parrish Jr. is a kid that they really love. Great second step from a running back standpoint, is a deep threat. Snoop Connor's kind of their between-the-tackles guy. They've got three receivers so far, Braylon Sanders, Dontario Drummond, and Jonathan Mingo, who have put up big numbers in this offense with Corral. They're probably looking for some more contributions from a tight end. They've had some injuries there. It's a good offensive line. Nick Broeker at left tackle is an NFL player. There's more to this offense than just Matt Corral. They've got weapons, and they can hurt you in a lot of ways. And the big thing to watch with Ole Miss, if you haven't watched them much, is tempo. They want to go really fast. And now that they have a little bit more depth on defense, I think they've embraced that more. And I think that's, that was their biggest weapon against Alabama a year ago. And if you looked at the Florida game, when Florida and Alabama played, when Florida started going fast, Alabama got gassed a little bit. This is a young Alabama defense. It's a very talented Alabama defense. And I think by the end of the year, it's going to be dominant. But right now, they're still kind of trying to find themselves a little bit, and they might be vulnerable to that tempo. But when you run that tempo, the risk you take, of course, is that if it's not effective, you hand that ball back to Bryce Young against kind of an average defense, and a game can get away from you in a hurry in Tuscaloosa.
Neil, great stuff. I really appreciate it. We get so much Alabama information. It's good to get an insight on their opponent, and a very good opponent in Ole Miss. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
You got it. Rebel Grove, Rivals.com is where you can find him. Neil McCready talking some Ole Miss football. Lane Kiffin does have a great quarterback in Matt Corral. But I kind of like his honesty there. Like, this is a team that is thin in a lot of areas, and maybe they don't win this game. A lot of people circled this one, as we talked about today. This is a big game because Ole Miss can put up points. But, when you look, they played Austin Peay and Tulane. That game against Louisville on Monday night was supposed to be bigger than it actually turned out to be. But offensively, we know they can do it, but I kind of like the way he said, look, if they lose a receiver, they're really in trouble. If they lose a defensive player, that's not Alabama. Alabama could lose some players and they'll just fill them up with other guys. This is going to be a real one of those nearly perfect performances in order to just be in the game for Ole Miss. But they do have a team that is capable of putting up some points. And when you can put up points, you never know what the game of football will do. That ball is shaped for a reason. It'll bounce different ways and cause problems for people. And that's all you're asking for. If you came into this game against Alabama with an offense that was struggling, you barely can throw the ball. You might be able to run if the conditions were right. Then you're going to get blown out. You're going to get blown out. But if you come into this game with a quarterback with an amazing arm and an amazing ability to get the team down the field and can get into the end zone, then you give yourself that open that maybe the defense makes a play. Maybe there's an interception there that's returned. Maybe a special teams play. Maybe there's just a weird way the game just unfolds for you. We saw it with Florida, right? They were getting kind of there was a feeling Alabama was in control, and then Florida upped the tempo and got back into that game and gave Alabama a scare. If you can do something in this game where points are really not going to be easy. Alabama's defense is great, not going to be easy, but we have the ability to score. We have the ability to go vertical. Then it gives you a fighting chance in other areas, even if you're weak. You don't have the best defense, fine, but maybe, just maybe, the way the game unfolds, you get a break or two. And if you get a break or two, you have, if they played South Carolina, South Carolina can't do anything offensively right now. If South Carolina got a break or two on defense, they wouldn't turn it into anything. But you give Ole Miss a break or two on defense, they could turn it into points and more points and more points. And next thing you know, you're in a dogfight. And when you're in a dogfight, anything can happen. So that's why this game has been circled by many as an opportunity to see Alabama upset. I still don't think it will happen, but at least there's an intrigue to this matchup. All right, as we continue, Tony D, Ron Culver, it's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. This hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loan options for your family. Rocket can. Lane Kiffin, in case you're wondering, is 46 years old. 46. His resume could fill three coaches' lifetimes for what he's done since he started coaching. Here's the list of what Lane Kiffin has accomplished by 46. He was assistant at Fresno State early in his life. Then he was a graduate assistant at Colorado State. Okay. Then in 2000, which was how long ago, Ron, last time I checked the calendar? 21 years ago. He was in quality control with Jacksonville Jaguars 21 years ago at 25 years old. Then he was the tight ends coach at USC. He was the wide receiver coach at USC. He was the offensive coordinator at USC. And then he was the Oakland Raiders head football coach for two seasons. Tennessee, USC, offensive coordinator at Alabama, Florida Atlantic, and Ole Miss. All by the time he's 46. God, it's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
He's a hustler.
He's a hustler, man. I'll tell you what. He knows what he's doing, man. He really does. He's got some dirt on some people. I don't know. But he's a really good coach. I mean, he's quirky and he's weird. And sometimes he does things on social media that you go, well, all right. But he's a good coach. And it'll be interesting to see what team he puts together for Saturday at Tuscaloosa. They could get blown out in this game. Or they could make it close. I don't know.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Guys, it all depends on what Ole Miss team shows up.
I mean, he was 33 when he was hired by the Tennessee Volunteers. He was the youngest coach in Division I at the time. But remember, he was 31 when he was head coach of the Raiders. 31! He was the head coach of the Raiders! Like, who did that, Al Davis? That's nuts. But John Madden worked out at 32. All right, we'll have Hour 3 coming up next as we continue. It is Wake Up Call, Sportsmap Radio.